giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. This is Nick Keiser, not Adam Vingan, for this edition this week here, talking the latest on the Nashville Predators. And my guest this week, none other than Russell Venusi, former Beer League teammate, fellow teammate, I guess kind of back in high school-ish. Like, we played against each other, but Russell's going to be with me from Main Street Media this week, talking everything Preds. And look, man, we get to react to a Preds win from the other night. I love this. And Russell, glad to have you. How you doing?
Thanks for having me, Nick. Doing well. And you're right, the Preds are technically still in playoff contention. So there's that to hang on to after last night's win over Carolina. But
absolutely.
Yes, a road win. Those have been rare this season. And so that was big for them to go out to Raleigh and come home with a little bit of happiness there on the point, right?
Yeah, certainly so. It was a good sign to see some younger players step up. We saw UC Saros pick up his 200th win, by the way. That was a milestone that none other goalie in his draft class has made so far. Now, that draft class is not, like, special or anything necessarily with the goaltenders. Several great players from that draft class from 2013, but 200 wins, no small feat for sure. But, yeah, Preds win 3-1. Luke Evangelista scored twice in that one, something that Luke has now done four times in his young career, and he's not done it since, I believe, it was November of 2023. So, been some time since Luke Evangelista had two goals in a game. He had a four-point game in one of those instances as well, and he's been a very good player the last few games. Been on that top line, obviously, Russell. So, just in watching last night's game, too, I felt encouraged. How did you feel watching that game? It was 3-1. And by the way, they had 9 shots through the first 40 minutes of the game, and they still won 3-1. Just a wild feat to accomplish against a top Eastern Conference team.
Well, my first takeaway is that I'm stunned that Mark Jankowski did not score a goal.
Because I know, right?
In his first, I think, 8 shots with the Hurricanes, yeah, he scored 6, which is just incredible. Wild. Congrats to him. I don't think anybody saw that coming. It's probably one of the best stories so far from the trade deadline. But that aside, it was great to see Evangelista show what I think we all know he can do, what he's sort of flashed his potential to do. And the deke that he had on the first goal, I
beautiful.
Mean, just incredible.
Saucy stuff.
And you could tell his teammates on the bench were just totally fired up. I saw a couple jaws dropped, it looked like. They were just floored by how great of a play that was. And you and I were talking a few weeks ago, just in the hallway at Bridgestone, when Evangelista was struggling, just like, hey, is he going to end up going the same way of Cody Glass, Philip Tomasino, Tommy Novak, all these guys who've come in, had some success kind of right off the bat, and then fell off. And then, as we know, Barry Trotz has said, if you're not the right guy, I'm going to move you pretty quickly. And so you'd hate to see Evangelista go down that same path, because he's got so much talent and so much skill. So for him to come on strong late, I think that is huge, not only for the Preds, but just for his confidence and for his sake moving into next season.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that was a conversation you and I had. I think it was around the trade deadline, possibly, I think. So we just, you know, the Preds were in that spot where we didn't know who was going to stay, who was going to go. And quite frankly, you know, this has to be mentioned. He's on a one-year deal right now. He's going to be an RFA this summer. You know, last year it was Spencer Stastny who had to go to arbitration. And that was settled rather quickly, right? But the Predators could only take one player to arbitration during that time frame where he can be an RFA. So what does this summer look like? You know, like that might be something that we see. And, you know, I was kind of wondering if the Predators would lock him up around the deadline as well, just on a small note, because, you know, last year we saw Dante Fabre get a deal and some other smaller guys, I think, got like a one-year deal, like a Cole Smith or a McCarron or something like that around like the deadline, like before and after the presser. I was just baffled, like, why are contracts coming out now around like right after the trade deadline? But yeah, Luke Evangelista, that's a very encouraging story. And how do you think he's been able just to elevate those two veterans and Ryan O'Reilly? And at times, I think he's been out there with Stamkos, but I know for the priority that he's been on that top line, he's been with Forsberg as well and Ryan O'Reilly. Gus Nyquist is gone now, and that spot's opened up. And quite frankly, I thought that would happen a lot earlier. But what have you made of him playing with two elaborate and talented players like those guys?
Yeah, I think that has certainly helped him to be mixed in with those guys. I know for a lot of the season he's been on the third line with Tommy Novak. And at times I think that pairing worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason this year they didn't have a whole lot going. Mm-hmm. Tommy Novak was way down. Evangelista was way down. I will say with Evangelista, he's been so banged up this year too. I think that's maybe an underrated aspect of his mm-hmm. struggles is that every time he's maybe gotten a little bit of traction, he's, you know, some sort of injury. I think he's had certainly lower body injuries at least twice.
I think a few different times, of course. Yeah.
We never get a ton of information on exactly what happened, but you can tell he was in some pain. He missed
several
games.
It was his left leg. I think I remember that. I think it was in Winnipeg. I'm looking at my list of like archives. Like I got all the transactions and injuries here. Yeah, I've got, let's see. It was back in January on the 9th. It was lower body. And that was when Nashville announced him being out for possibly 4 weeks. And then he came off IR on January 31st. And then he kind of aggravated it a few different times. So you're certainly right on that front.
Yeah, I think that was the time that Tommy Novak had to sort of help him off the ice, too. He's in a ton of pain.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as he gets further removed from that, you got to think that he's getting more healthy. You know, mm-hmm. fingers crossed there. And it certainly helps to be playing with Ryan O'Reilly, Philip Forsberg. Just thinking about a young player in that situation, that's got to help your confidence to know that, hey, you're with two really solid guys that are going to mm-hmm. help set you up. You can set them up. And that seems to be working well. And I think this has sort of been Barry Trotz's goal the whole time, was to get some of these younger players mixed in with some of the top veteran talent and see if they can mesh together. And so I think that's maybe the first or best example that we have so far of Trotz's vision kind of coming to life there.
Uh-huh.
And I do think that Evangelista being in the top six is benefiting him. It's benefiting the Preds. And so mm-hmm. I imagine they're going to try to keep him there as long as he continues to produce like this.
Absolutely. And I think just looking at the body of work of the players that have done well since the Four Nations break ended, let's just take a quick glance at this, Russell. Obviously, Philip Forsberg is leading the way. He's got 13 points in 17 games. Stamkos has 12 in 17 games. Luke Evangelista right there in third place with 9 points in 16 games. A lot of that coming in the last week or so. So a great thing for him, 4 goals, 5 assists. Ryan O'Reilly, he's right behind him with 9 points in 17. Ryan O'Reilly's been all right. Very, very hard on himself over the last few games in press conferences, and we've been there for those and how much he blames himself. But real quick, too, I thought it was a quick note, just Evangelista's confidence boost before we move on to Fedor Svechkov here, before we break here. But it's just interesting, too, that Luke Evangelista had a home meal. His mom was in town. Well, got hockey night in Canada. Wouldn't you be sauced up for that, too? I mean, that was a good night for him, for sure. He got the hockey night in Canada towel, too, and he got to wear that on the plane ride, too. So that confidence was oozing, Russell. I don't know about you, but that would feel great.
Yeah, there's something about a good home-cooked meal from your mom. There's some comfort there, and clearly maybe that's what he needed to sort of get on track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and let's talk about Fedor Svechkov, and I know that I've talked with you about him, and I've talked to Alex Doherty from the Tennessean about him and his face-offs, and I wrote something over at Lower Broad earlier in the year, just the art of the face-off, and one thing that really stood out to me about Fedor, and I was just generally asking, like, what do you struggle with the most? And he was telling me about how face-offs, I'm really bad. And so he was just really brutally honest with himself. And I think he's handled himself really, really well in that regard. And I think as he begins to just learn through those gaffes and learn through those turnovers, he's really turned it over and been like, hey, I'm going to make the most out of every offensive chance I possibly can. And I think there was a couple of games ago, I want to say maybe last Thursday or something like that, he had a turnover. I think it was a goal that was allowed. It's skipping my mind right now. But he lost a faceoff. Oh, it was against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mitch Marner's goal off the faceoff. I don't know if you remember seeing that or not. It was right off the faceoff. But, I mean, he lost it in half a second. And before Saros knew it, it was back behind him. And I remember, I mean, that was the game that Fedor had a couple of points, and I thought he responded well. But what have you made overall of Svechkov here the last few games and just his confidence as well?
Yeah, I think one thing we have to remember with him is that he's only 21 years old. It looks like he turns 22 on April 5th, so still a really young guy. He's only listed at 187 pounds.
I know, he's a small stick,
dude. And so he's still got some time to fill out his frame, to get stronger, to get bigger. And that will certainly help him down the middle in things like face-offs, front of the net, the things that centers have to do to be effective. So I think that will come with time. But with him, the skill is obviously there. Some of the passes he's made, some of the shots he's had make you go, hey, this looks like a guy that could be a long-term asset for them. And, you know, I don't know where that looks like in the lineup. Could it be the second line, third line? We'll see.
Yeah.
I think he's got a ton of potential, and he's starting to show that. And I think seeing him, you know, in that game where Steven Stamkos had the overtime winner,
that's
I believe
right.
it was against Chicago, yes. the pass that he had, the wherewithal to get that
him
over Stamkos.
Yep.
It's that was a great mix there, too. It's like to see, again, this vision that Trotz has of pairing a guy like Svechkov
yep.
with a Stamkos or an O'Reilly, or not an O'Reilly, but a Forsberg, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You just kind of see where maybe that could work.
Perhaps, yeah.
So I think that's been promising. And he, of the young guys, and I know we're going to talk about them later, he's been one of the most promising to me
Absolutely.
That I've seen.
Yeah, and back to that overtime. I mean, that was almost a few weeks ago. I remember when I asked Spencer about going over the boards for that, I was like, hey, did you know you were going out there doing overtime? He's like, no, I had zero idea. And I just went, like, he just heard his name called and he just went. And before he knew it, the puck was on a stick. The game was on a stick. And he said, all I heard was Svech yelling at me to drop it back. And I just knew he was there. So the rest was history after that. They just, you know, obviously found that one timer for Steven and they won that game. That was a phenomenal overtime period as well, Russell. But yeah, the Nashville Predators have some young, encouraging players. They have limited time left to kind of figure out what those guys look like. It's kind of, I don't want to call it preseason crunch time to figure out what you got, but this is more or less about their identity. You know, it's more about what they are trying to be moving forward as a franchise. And so that's going to be something that Russell and I talk a lot about here as the show moves on here. But I think personally for me, I think it's really big that we just kind of touch on Barry Trotz's vision. Like we were just kind of teasing about there's, what is he feeling about this process? And honestly, too, how does he move into the offseason where he can best complement those players as well? But also some draft capital question. He was with Robbie Stanley on the pregame show on Tuesday evening before the Predators were in Raleigh taking on the Hurricanes in that 3-1 win. We'll hear a little bit from that conversation. Russell and I will talk about that as well. But you're listening to Preds Insiders here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Nick Kieser, Russell Venuzzi from Main Street Media here with you this evening, talking the latest on your favorite hockey team here in Nashville. So, Russell, we kind of talked about it last segment a little bit, the future of the Predators, the younger players, but also, more importantly, just what the vision is from the mind of Barry Trotz, because it's run amok. It's not gone very well whatsoever. This team's going to miss the playoffs. And, man, expectation was so high back in the summertime, and now it's just come down to a crashing stop. And, you know, it's interesting to hear how much, not how much he's backpedaled necessarily, Russell, but it's intriguing to hear how much his plan has kind of changed. Because what really stood out to me at the trade deadline was he was saying that his plan is in ink, but the path is in pencil. That was really intriguing to me. So just real quick, what do you think about his vision? And do you think he's really having to adjust on the fly here as he goes into his now, I guess, technically third summer with the organization?
Yeah, I think having a season like this is obviously a wrench in the plans there for Trotz. But I will say he has been pretty consistent, and this is difficult to do, but pretty consistent on the idea that, hey, we have this needle we want to thread. There is a group of prospects and draft picks that are eventually going to be available to us that are going to be ready at some undetermined date in the future.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, let's go ahead and have a good team right now. Bring in Stamkos, Marchessault, Shea, all those guys to pair with who we've got already. Have a good team right now. Let's see if we can make a run at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we do, great. That's awesome. If they don't, then hopefully in a few years down the road, more of these guys will be ready.
Exactly.
And they can just keep having a good team. I think they want to be competitive every year. Now, in saying that, you know, he tried to tamper down the expectations at the beginning of the year, saying, hey, this is all fantasy hockey until we see what happens.
Yep.
And, hey, you know, everybody's talking about Stanley Cup. I just want to win a round, is what he said. I just want to win one playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously that's not going to happen this year. But I do think that I'm not sure. There have been some goalposts moved a little bit, but I think at the same time, if you harken back to some of his conversations either last offseason or especially early in this season, he talked about threading that needle of basically just trying to have a good team for years to come. And it hasn't worked out that way, but, you know, if they make the right moves this offseason, I don't see why they couldn't be better next year. They have plenty of talent on the team, plenty of draft picks to work with, and could even trade some of those picks, as Trotz is going to talk about here. So.
Yeah, exactly. So let's kind of get into that. So the Predators, this is the first time in franchise history that I'm aware of. I'm pretty sure this is accurate. I remember when the Predators got these three picks, I remember seeing Brooks Bratton, myself, and a few others say, first time in franchise history that the Predators have three first-round picks, and they have five in the first two rounds, which I'm not sure if they've done that before, possibly, I want to say. But yeah, I mean, and you have no seventh, and it's not like that matters significantly unless you draft an Aiden Fink, I guess. But yeah, I mean, they've got several draft picks this year, and they have a first for the next 2 years. They have 2 seconds next year, and they have twos kind of scattered for the next couple of seasons as well. But yeah, like we were talking about last segment, Barry Trotz, general manager, was with Robbie Stanley before the Predators played the Hurricanes on Tuesday evening. And here's a little bit about what he said just in terms of the draft capital and what's ahead for this franchise as they go into the summer.
Pretty sure that I'm not going to move the first pick.
Right.
But I would say the next two picks are in play for different scenarios. I mean, we have to wait for the lottery. That would be the first thing that we have to wait for and see where we go there. And then obviously the draft will start and all the balls will sort of fit into place. And, you know, we have different scenarios. We may draft the first two picks, trade the third or push it to another year or move it to acquire another player. We'll look at all those scenarios and have to play out a little bit. And there's a lot of work to be done before the draft. So we'll do that. That won't be a problem.
That was Barry Trotz and talking about just what was, you know, his idea going into the summertime. And obviously they have plenty of time. Their board is kind of being set as we speak. They're kind of in those meetings, figuring out what things will look like. And I'm encouraged by the draft class a little bit. It is not as deep as maybe some NHL organizations would like it to be. You're not going to have a Connor McDavid or, you know, and Alexander Ovechkin or Sidney Crosby sitting here in the draft. There's not going to be any of those players till maybe next season where there's a Gavin McKenna who's absolutely lighting it up in junior. I mean, he had 23 points in like his last seven games. So that will be a prospect to keep eyes on next year as well. So I wouldn't necessarily say Nashville is going to be bad enough to be in that spot next year, but you never know. So, but Russell, what did you make of those comments? I know that you were listening to him live as well yesterday, but what did you make of those comments, just kind of revisiting what his plan is here?
Well, I think it makes sense that he'd want to hold on to that first pick because it's likely going to be a top five selection. We'll see kind of where that lands in the lottery, but that is going to be a premium level player. If they're lucky, fortunate, maybe it's a player they can use almost right away or within a year or two, rather than the normal 4, 5, or 6 years that it takes these 18, 17-year-old kids to develop into NHL players. So that didn't surprise me. I do think just looking at all this draft capital, though, Nick, over these next 2 years, it's hard for me to imagine that Trotz is going to kind of sit idly by and let the team struggle and not use at least some of that to help out the current team.
Mm-hmm.
And with him saying that right there, that those other two picks in the first round, he would consider if it was the right, you know, the right move.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of perked my ears up a little bit because they do have some holes on the team. And if they could get maybe a younger player that has some term on the contract, that could be worth parting with some of that capital just because to this point, they haven't touched it. They've really mm-hmm. only added to it.
Yeah.
So with Trotz, I mean, there's going to be some urgency to have a better team next year, I think. You know, you don't want to have multiple seasons like this. And so in the interim, while you're going to be waiting on some of these guys that they do end up drafting, I think you need to have some good players in the meantime too that can kind of help bridge that gap. So I would not be shocked at all if they use some of this capital to go ahead and to acquire some current assets to go with all these future assets that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, Trotz has talked about, and this is a reminder for our listeners as well, he has mentioned how he would like to get players with a little bit of term. And I think the perfect microcosm of that would be, look at what he did with Michael Bunting. You trade two roster players and a draft pick for Bunting and a future draft pick. I believe it's in next year's draft. It's a fourth rounder pick, I want to say. But they get a guy like that. And I remember he actually poked fun at Alex at the press conference. He's like, I don't know if you were listening, but Michael's kind of a guy we would have targeted in free agency. But that is intriguing that he would be interested in using one of those picks. And he also talked about in the same breath of Roman Josi's news, just how we might not see him. It's kind of weird how we've not heard them kind of talk about how, hey, he's not coming back. Anyway, I think it's interesting that he mentioned getting a right-handed shot on the blue line for him this summer. So that might be something he does with one of those draft picks. And quite frankly, it's been a really disappointing from Brady Shea. And I know you and I are going to talk about the defense in just a little bit, but I think for me at least, Russell, you would be dumb to not at least call GMs and go, would you want to be in the first round this year? Like a team that doesn't have a first round pick. I'd have to take a look at who doesn't. But it would be super intriguing to me to go, who's a playoff team right now that maybe has a guy that has 1 or 2 years, maybe 3 years, that maybe they want to move off of. Maybe they would want to feel okay with their depth and maybe utilize one of those homegrown players. You just never know what other GMs are thinking. So why not use one of those picks? Do you think that's pretty reasonable from that mind?
Yeah, I think exploring the trade market for a right-handed shot is probably a good idea because I was looking at some of the right-handed guys that could become available as free agents.
What do you think here?
First name that popped out to me, Nick, Dante Fabro.
You would really want to trade back
Wouldn't
for him.
Wouldn't that be something?
Not for a
No,
first.
No, he's going to be unrestricted free agent.
Right, yeah. So I don't know. I would some bad blood.
Yeah, I would highly doubt he wants to come back here after they've basically said, hey, we have replacements for you.
Exactly.
He's had a good season in Columbus. Maybe he'll re-up there, but just some of the other names that could also be available if they don't get contract extensions from their current teams. Brett Burns, he's 40.
Interesting.
With the Hurricanes.
Yeah. All those animals coming to Nashville.
Yep, Cody Ceci from the Stars, Neil Pionk from the Jets, mm-hmm. Aaron Ekblad from the Panthers.
Ooh.
I don't know if a lot of these guys may want to stay with their teams. They've got a lot of those are good teams. But assuming none of those are options, then yeah, it's going to be the trade market because otherwise the pickings were a bit slim there on the right-handed side
for
defensemen.
Yeah, exactly. And I can remember Seth Jones is a right-handed shot too, right? I want to say he is, but we could look that up real quick. But yeah, I mean, those are great options. I'll kind of just react to that. I know that you're fervently looking that up for me as I just was wondering. I'm pretty sure he's a right-handed shot. Maybe not. But
He is.
Okay, cool. But that would be interesting to think, after Seth Jones, I know his contract had to be retained by Chicago. So you go to Florida and you go, I know you just wanted him for the playoffs. Like, if you're not happy with him enough, would you want to trade him for one of our first rounders? That'd be interesting to kind of see if Trotz would want to go back down that path because he was drafted during the end of Trotz's era. So it's very interesting. I know that, Seth Jones hasn't lived up to what he used to be necessarily. He's kind of been struggling, but maybe he'll end up staying down there. But I do like the idea of like a Neil Pionk. I don't know about a Brent Burns necessarily on that side, but, just the way that they've struggled, they just need some continuity with a leadership guy, and he's going to go find someone that's won a playoff series or two at the least. Somebody that's probably won more than that, honestly. But yeah, that is certainly somewhere to go with all that, Russell. But those are good names.
Yeah, because when you look at it, they have so many left-handed guys.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Roman Josi, Brady Shea, Jeremy Lauzon, who will hopefully be back healthy as well.
Right.
And then beyond that, you've got Adam Willsby, who they seem to be high on.
Yep.
Mark Delgado. So they are, I think, set on the left side. But the right side, like you said, there's a hole in that first line with Josi. And then after that, it's kind of some unproven names. You have Nick Blankenberg, who, if I'm playing armchair GM, I think Nick Blankenberg is on my team next year.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. And then you also get, a couple of guys off of waivers. I highly doubt they hang around too. You got Andreas Englund, and then you've also got Jordan Osterley, but I don't think those guys end up staying, honestly.
Yeah, and with Englund being left-handed, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, but then they also have Spencer Stastny and Justin Barron on the right side. They need to figure out what to do there as well. I know each of them have shown some promise. Justin Barron, obviously, they gave up a lot to get him. And even though that was partially a salary dump there for Alexander Carrier, Justin Barron has shown some offensive flash, but at times has sort of been caught out of place on defense and has burned them. And then Stastny, of course, missed half this season due to personal reasons. So there's a lot of questions there on the right side. I think that's where we're going to be keeping our eyes this offseason, see what they do.
No, absolutely. There are several pending UFAs, and I think it's interesting to kind of look down the line here. There's not really a situation where there's like you want to get a stopgap player necessarily, because those guys are relatively younger. Like Mark Dolgaiso's not the youngest guy. He's 25. You know, he's around our age. Spencer Stastny, same age as well. But those that you like guys like that are around that point where it's got to work or we're going to move on from you. And I think Justin Barron being that right-handed shot, he's just I personally, like armchair GM, I wouldn't imagine I would even want him back next year. Just for the amount of character you want to have on the blue line, he's just not proven to me, at least, that he is capable of being an aggressive guy that, yeah, he's a two-way defenseman, but he's not playing aggressive enough to really fit the identity for what is demanded in Andrew Brunette's system. So we'll see how everything kind of pans out there. But yeah, those three draft picks are certainly going to be something to keep eyes on. So that'll be more summer scuttlebutt for sure. But coming up next year on Preds Insiders, a deal was done between the Predators and the Milwaukee Admirals. We'll talk more about that coming up next year on Preds Insiders around 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Nick Kieser, Russell Venusi here. Getting ready for a football game here with this song here. But Yeah, man.
Fired up.
Talking everything Nashville Predators as the team is back home tomorrow night against the pesky St. Louis Blues, who are definitely the NHL's best team currently. But Russell, the Predators, Milwaukee Admirals, everybody's beloved AHL affiliate here in town that we just love talking about at 102.5 The Game, they are now in a four-year agreement on a new deal. So good to see that between the Predators and the Admirals. They've had a relationship since their inception here in town. That's something that David Poile was really prideful about before he stepped down as GM, and he got that deal done before he ended up stepping out of the door, Barry Trotz taking over. But the proof is in the pudding, and as they say, the road to Nashville goes through Milwaukee. I've heard that way too many times over the last couple of years, but that is definitely true, and it's encouraging to see something like that happen, Russell. And I know for me, at least, when I've seen the Predators bring up guys from Milwaukee, they have nothing but great things to say about them and how they've developed their players and just the culture that they have down there. So I know you weren't in the presser live time like me per se, but you did go back and listen. Just what were your overall kind of takeaways from that? But more importantly, just what it means to have a long-term relationship with a team like that.
Well, my first takeaway was you get a sense of how both sides feel about the partnership in that they could talk for 30 minutes about it in a press conference. That was astounding, and it was great. I mean, it's great to have more information. I'm always going to be a fan of that. But
yeah, and Barry Trotz is always transparent. So.
Oh, yes. And we love that. We are a big fan of that.
Yes.
But usually this kind of thing is just a release, a quick little story.
Mm-hmm.
To get that much kind of detail about it, I thought was cool. And they clearly are a big fan of the continuity. I mean, first off, it's good for the fans. Every time I'm at a Preds game, I see an Admirals jersey. And I know I haven't been to an Admirals game. I know you have. But there's always Predators jerseys there, it seems like.
People make trips in droves, too, but like going both ways, too, apparently.
In droves, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware it was in droves. But but still, that part of it, I think, is neat for the fan base to have that connection with the NHL team.
Uh-huh.
Because when you look at... I just look at the Nashville Sounds here in town.
That's
baseball.
A good point. Yeah,
can you name who their affiliate is?
It is with Milwaukee themselves. It is funny.
There you go.
I'm aware. You could test me on baseball. They were
just
with.
Making sure.
No, I mean, like, what was it? The Sounds were also with the Texas Rangers. They were also with the Yankees at one point. I want to say
Oakland A's, Cincinnati Reds,
Cincinnati
Pittsburgh
Reds.
So
a lot,
if you ask the average Nashvillian at any given time, they may not know who the Sounds are affiliated with. And I think that, and even baseball switches teams around a lot.
They do, yeah.
But that doesn't give the fan base really any connection to, mm-mm, hey, here's this guy that I saw 10 years ago for the Sounds on the big league club. Well, no, it's a totally different team now. And that's not even, there's no connection there. So I think it is cool that they send us hockey players, we send them baseball players. Hopefully that kind of keeps up. But on the baseball side, it hasn't been there long enough to have that same continuity that the Admirals and the Predators have. So I think that part is cool. And then also just logistically speaking too, I mean, I went to Milwaukee last week for the NCAA tournament Lipscomb, their ill-fated trip. It was cool to see them on the big stage, but ran into a buzzsaw.
That's okay. You can gloat about being in the local college that made it. That's awesome. Yeah.
Second time ever. So proud of my Bisons. But so I'm on the flight, direct flight Southwest, super easy. I get on, they say, hey, it's going to be an hour. I listen to a few songs. Mid-flight ginger ale, which ginger ale on a flight, if you have not done that before.
Hey, man, Paul Kuharsky likes his ginger chews on Robbie and Rex Road. So.
There you go. But on a flight, it hits different. And I was done enjoying my ginger ale, and they said, hey, we're on the descent. Go ahead and get your seatbelts back on. Like, that was one of the easiest flights I've had in a long time. So the fact that they can wake up at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning and say, oh, we need somebody right now. Mm-hmm. There's a chance they could get them there in time for the game that night.
Yeah, a couple hours, yeah.
So I think that part of it logistically is important. And I know they talked a lot about wanting to have a winning team there, and they do everything they can to have a good team. They don't just call up the ECHL guys to fill roster spots. They'll go and acquire somebody, a veteran, to go along with the young developing prospects. And that makes a lot of sense to me. You want to have those prospects on a good team. You want them to be playing with some guys that know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not NHL guys per se, they're at least solid pros and not just fringe players that maybe don't belong there.
Right, exactly.
And I think having that winning team too allows those prospects to get a feel for that, but also they get extra games. Because the Calder Cup playoffs, Milwaukee had a deep run, I know, last year.
Last two years.
So LaRue, Svechkov, guys like that played 15 additional games, high pressure environment. And I've got to think that help them be a little bit more ready to come this season and to get into the NHL. So Trotz and Scott Nickel and all the people involved with the personnel side, I think they're really invested in having a good team.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Milwaukee franchise likes that because having a winning team with a lot of good players helps them draw fans and fill up their arena. So I think the winning and the development side, and then the Milwaukee having a viable fan base, I think that's all kind of goes hand in hand there, and it seems to be working pretty well.
Yeah, it absolutely does. So far this year, they have dressed 40 different guys, by the way. So, and that's just Nashville running into injury problems, guys also being out for the rest of the seasons. I know that Scott Nickel talked about some guys having some shoulder surgeries. One player, I forget who it is, he didn't name it, but I want to say it was maybe Jordan Frasker or something like that. Somebody had their Achilles injury as well. So that's definitely a tough short end of the stick as well to kind of suffer something like that early on in the season. But yeah, I mean, to kind of go off of your point, that is a massive thing to get done. And the 2-year deal, I think at the time, was more or less of Nashville and Milwaukee. And I'm talking about when David Poile got that 2-year deal, they were able to say, hey, let's keep this going. And then we'll see how things go toward the end here. And obviously they know that Barry Trotz was named the GM and things have gone swimmingly, so they obviously kept that relationship going. So, Russell, that is a great thing to kind of run through, and it is kind of unique that, you know, Nashville gives Milwaukee the baseball players, the hockey players come to Nashville, and I think it's fun, too, to also reflect on the fact that Cal O'Reilly's run has been really fun to keep eyes on this year. I've not obviously talked a lot about him or covered him, but, I mean, for heck's sake, when you and I were going to games growing up, I mean, Cal O'Reilly's in the lineup every now and then he got moved around a few different times. So the fact that he's played over 1,000 just in general is really cool. And so is Ryan now, his younger brother, Stanley Cup champion. Cal has just been that journeyman, has a big family up there. And even in that locker room, it's a big family for them as well. So having those cultural pieces has been really nice. Obviously, they lost a few guys, like Vinny Hinostroza was a guy that was part of a trade earlier. I know that getting someone like a Kiefer Bellows in there was a good thing. Now he's in Nashville. At the time, he had 29 points before Bellows got called up. And then we've seen a lot of younger players, too. I know that we want to talk about the future on defense here. So let's kind of go ahead and go in that direction, Russell. So they've got a couple of younger, nice faces to have in that locker room right now. And the top scoring D-man is Ryan Ufko with 25 points in 64 games. And then you've also got Kevin Gravel's leadership that's there. But, you know, on the blue line as well, they've called up Jake Livingstone a couple of times. He was an undrafted guy out of Mankato. He's not really been anything crazy just in terms of maybe NHL prospects. But also on the blue line, guys that are in Nashville now, Spencer Stastny, Mark Delgado, Nick Blankenberg. He only played 13 games there, which is wild to me, but now he's quarterbacking the first power play unit in Nashville because Roman Yossi's out. But then also guys like Jack Mateer, who are also rookies down there this year. Mark's a bigger D-man as well. But just that future in general, Luke Prokop is there as well. But like I'm trying to say here, Russell, just in general, how encouraged are you by that defensive depth now up in Nashville, but also making an impact there as well?
Yeah, I like it. It seems like they have some options. And of course, like Trot said, they do need somebody that can fill that kind of top line, right-sided spot there. But otherwise, I mean, like I said, I think Blankenberg has got a spot on this team next year.
Maybe so, yeah.
And it seems like Willsby, if he's not in the starting lineup, maybe he could be that guy that rotates in.
Maybe,
he could be the seventh guy, maybe. Delgazzo will be in that mix probably too, just like he has the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as sure about some of the younger guys. It seems like maybe Ryan Ufko still needs some time.
Maybe, yeah.
Tanner Mullendike, we'll see. I mean, he was kind of there into the end of training camp this year, and I know that's somebody that they want to get here when he's ready. It seems like he would probably benefit from at least a little bit of time in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes too. But I like what they've got there, and they obviously need to supplement it with somebody on the right side. But mm-hmm. that to me is promising, and then. When you look at the forwards, too, I think there's a couple guys that probably are not going back to Milwaukee. And that's,
probably not.
Svechkov and LaRue.
For sure.
I think they're probably, as we sit here today, probably locks for next year's roster.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Blankenberg, Willsby have a good chance to be there. Guys that I've got on the bubble right now, again, without having any idea what the moves are this offseason.
Sure.
Barron, Delgazzo, Stasny, I think those guys could go either way.
I think so, yeah.
One dark horse, and you mentioned him. Could be Kiefer Bellows.
Could be, yeah.
He's been filling out that right wing spot on the fourth line. They've cycled through a lot of guys on that spot.
Mm-hmm.
I know Kiefer Sherwood held down that role last year and helped create that identity line. They've been trying to get back to that.
Yeah.
Maybe Bellows is that guy.
Could be.
If he keeps playing well, he might at least get a look there. I also think that Ozzie Weisblatt, another Milwaukee guy, could eventually fill that role. He seems like he's maybe wired that way with the physicality and the speed and things like that. So, and then... At some point next season, we've already seen him a little bit this year, Joakim Kimmel.
Yes. On the power plays, that will be a boost for sure.
So he's another one that probably at some point next season we'll see him again for an extended look. It just so much of this just depends on injuries, and who they bring in, and when he's ready and all that kind of things. But those are some of the names that come to mind, at least kind of here in the short-term future that I'm looking at and saying, hey, these guys have a pretty good chance to be involved at least with the big club.
They absolutely do. And we will definitely keep you more updated on that here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game just this off season and just everything that's going on here. I mean, the hockey depth here has been phenomenal just to kind of talk about. But, you know, I think they will undergo some significant renovation on the blue line this off season. They will do a lot of self-evaluations for sure. And just to kind of gauge a little bit of this as well before we kind of move on, Russell, but the Admirals are currently first in the Central, by the way. They're 33-20-5, and that is probably going to be good enough for them to lock up the division. But Texas they have 4 games in hand on them, so Texas might be able to catch them. They're currently tied in points. So, and obviously Rowe is going for Milwaukee right now, so regulation over overtime, just that's interesting for me at least. But one thing I will make a quick comment on, and what something that Scott Nichols said, there will be some younger junior players that go to Milwaukee this summer. There are a few guys that did not make junior playoffs, those players being Kalen Lind from the Red Deer Rebels, and then also Hiroki Glasic, or I think that's how you say his name. There are a couple different ways that I've heard it said, or Gosich is how Scott Nichols says it, but he'll be in the lineup probably with Milwaukee. Those two guys will at least be around, maybe not play very much, but maybe just get that sense of what professionalism is like. That way they know what the everyday lifestyle is like. They stay in shape, they work out, they get to see what the playoff atmosphere is like. So maybe they get in, maybe not. They'd have to impress in practice. But Russell, we could see some younger junior players there, so that might be pretty fun.
Yeah, put them out there. And for all the hockey junkies, whatever run Milwaukee goes on is going to give everybody a little bit of entertainment there, because, hey, the Preds season is going to end April 16th.
Yeah.
That turns into a long 6-month off season there.
Yeah.
So enjoy it as long as you have it. And absolutely, it'd be great to see some of those young guys in action.
Yeah. Well, the Predators and Milwaukee Admirals are partners for the next 4 years, and we'll see how that goes for the next few years. What Barry Trotz and Scott Nichol chef up here over the offseason. What do they add? What do they retain? We'll have to keep tabs on that. But coming up next year on Preds Insiders, as we wrap things up here, what's on the horizon for the Preds with 11 more games left? A couple of faces return to Nashville as well, and a new face will have Nashville come their way as well. So stay tuned for that here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Nick Kieser sitting in here with Russell Venusi here with you this evening. You'll have some more Preds hockey talk coming up here in just a little bit. But Russell, the Preds have 11 more games left this season, and they got some tough contests coming up here as well. They'll also travel to Utah for the first time, and that'll be a fun trip for Pete Weber, I know, because he likes to visit new places. I'd have to ask him what number rink that's going to be for him. But yeah, the Predators are definitely going to have their hands full, and St. Louis is in town here tomorrow night. So the Predators are going to try to crush some dreams, Russell. But yeah, 11 more games, one of those games being against the Montreal Canadiens. Alexander Carrier will be making his re-debut on the other side of things. He's never been an enemy here in town yet. So, and there's some younger defensemen staying in his house. I don't know if you caught that, but I think it's Nick Blankenberg, Nick Blankenberg, Adam Willsby, and one other player as well, I think, is staying at his house currently because nobody's there, obviously. So, but yeah, he'll be back in town here pretty soon. And there's one other player. I think you mentioned a defenseman's coming back too, right?
Well, we talked about him earlier in the
show.
That's
right. Yeah.
Mr. Dante Fabro.
Yeah.
It will be on the road. So,
yeah, that is on the road.
Still,
yeah.
It's,
he's never played Nashville as, you know, an opponent.
That's
yet,
right. I'd imagine he's going to be pretty motivated to go out there and have a good game.
I would say so, considering he kind of was, you know, laid aside for nothing. I remember seeing him too. He was kind of saying goodbye the day he was put on waivers. He was a scratch, obviously. I remember seeing him, like, he was dapping up everybody, like, basically saying goodbye. So it's going to be a very emotional game for him. So, but yeah, Russell, they go to Utah for the first time, some desperate teams. Let's kind of talk about Thursday's game for just a second here, because St. Louis has been tearing the NHL up since the Four Nations break. Since the Four Nations break ended. I mean, it's unreal. And Jeremy Rutherford, who covers the team for The Athletic, threw this out there last night after their latest win. I think they just won 6-1 last night. Who did they play? I will grab this real quick. It was Montreal, actually. So there you go. Pretty big night for them. But Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic threw this out there. The Blues are 13-2-2 since they came back from their break. I mean, this is definitely a resurgence like we saw. I mean, they've not been terrible this year, but it's similar to that run that they went on before they won their Stanley Cup. So they are definitely the NHL's best squad right now. They're averaging 4.06 goals per game. That's first in the league. They've also given up 2.18 goals against. That's the third fewest in the league. They've also scored 69 goals and given up 37. So being a plus 32 in that has definitely raised their goal differential, and it has gone from a minus 17 to a plus 15. That's unreal. I mean, the fact that St. Louis has done that good the last few weeks, really, I guess, last 2 months. I mean, that's astounding, Russell. What have you made of the Blues run? And you saw them last week here as well.
Yeah, everything that you said there, Nick, makes me think that this would be a great game for the Predators to steal.
Yeah, it would
be. They haven't beaten the Blues this year. They lost 7-4 on December 27th. They lost 4-1, of course, last week at home, and then lost 4-1 again on Sunday. And, man, Michael McCarron has been kicked out of each of the last two games against the Blues.
Yes, he has.
Maybe he can make it the hat trick.
I don't know.
The game misconduct hat trick there. But I'm expecting a physical game.
Yes.
Both of those matchups in the last week and a half, I mean, you can just tell these teams do not like each other.
No.
There's going to be some bad blood that spoils over into this one. I just got to think it will. Mm-hmm. And I would not be shocked at all if there's at least one fight.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think this is going to be a really fun game. And like you said, St. Louis has got right now the inside track to that second wild card spot.
Mm-hmm.
Anything Nashville can do to possibly mess up that path, I think, would be fun for them.
Yep.
So if you're looking at games to try to steal, this would be a great one.
This would be a phenomenal game to upset somebody and to ruin someone's good confidence as well. Because just taking a look at the conference, because this is the much better way to look at it for me, at least. I want the NHL to go back through the 1-8 playoffs, Russell. I don't know how you feel about the wild card. Okay.
So 100%.
Emphatic yes. I definitely want the 1-8 again and maybe do not a play-in, but maybe you could explore something like that one day, because the NBA does like their last like few seeded teams. I would maybe make it between that 9 and 10 to play in, maybe, or something like that. Or, well, obviously you'd have to do 7-8, then 9 and 10. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But look, in the Western Conference right now, the Blues are not like at the top by any means, but they've got 83 points. They're actually catching up with Minnesota. Minnesota has 85 points. They've really dropped off as of late too. Minnesota right now in their last 10, at the time of Russell and I talking, they are 4-5-1 in their last 10 games, whereas the Blues, they are 8-1-1 in their last 10 games, and they have won 7 in a row. So the Predators want to definitely make things interesting. Just in that wild card race, this is where it does kind of have to come into play here. The way that this is looking right now, Russell, you've got the Calgary Flames, 79 points, looking outward. The Vancouver Canucks, they have 78 points right now, and Utah is trying to squeak in here. They have some really good players. Utah's got Dylan Gunther, Logan Cooley. They've got some really talented players that, honestly, I think they have a much better chance of making it, just in terms of their talent, perhaps. But what have you made of just the last few, you know, games here? And, you know, I mean, could they beat St. Louis? I mean, they've got a couple of interesting games coming up. I want to say after they play St. Louis, that's right, they got Vegas is one team that's going to definitely make it. Columbus and the East, I think that's a team that I don't know if they're sitting comfortably necessarily. They are not, so that might make things interesting for them. They're three spots out of a wild card spot. But, yeah, I mean, and then you've got a tough draw in Dallas. Montreal is on the bubble right there. They're still in it right now. And then, like I said, Utah is looking on the outside as well. But how big do you think these games are for some of those playoff cusp teams?
Well, for the Preds, these are not very big games.
No,
but
we're aware. Yes,
yes. I think most everyone can agree the season probably just needs to end, and it will mercifully on April 16th.
Right,
we think.
Yeah,
haven't been eliminated yet.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't count them out. But no, yeah, I think. Look, the Preds are trying to build something for next year. They've had two good performances in the last several days here, the win it over Toronto, the win it Carolina, like we talked about. And I know a lot of people are going to say, yes, we want the best draft pick we can possibly get. Let's lose as many games as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of side with the Preds and Trotz on this, that is not good for morale. That's not good for the culture. You should not be trying to lose in games.
No.
And I don't think they are. And so
I don't think so either.
Over these last 10 games or so, yeah, try to win all of them. I don't see a problem with that. And yeah, if you can spoil some other team's playoff hopes, all the better.
Yeah.
But most importantly, I think for the Preds, it's all about them. It's all about Stamkos continuing to play well. Evangelista, keep building that confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's see Saros. Maybe he can get his save percentage back over 90.
He's been looking great, yeah.
Just little things like that. Just something to kind of take away at the end of the season. Because if you have if they were to lose most of these games, that's just going to make them feel even worse.
Yeah.
But if you can have a nice little finish here, you can go into your summer vacations and your golf trips and all that, just feeling a little better. And I think that's worth something.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Well, Russell, it's been a pleasure to have you on Preds Insiders this week. Where can the people keep up with you? Because I know you're quite busy. You don't just do Preds. I know you've done a lot of the season. You've done some other work as well. But where can the people follow you, man?
Yeah, MainStreet-Nashville.com is a great spot where you can find all of our stories.
Yep.
And then you can follow me on X, Twitter, whatever you call it, at RussellV_MSP.
All right. Sounds good. And you can always follow me at Keezer Nick. Always fun to keep track of the Preds. Let's see how they finish out the season. It's been a weird but honestly transparent way to look at things from Barry Trotz. But we'll see how the rest of the season goes. But thank you for listening to Preds Insiders. We'll have Penalty Box Radio coming up here around 8 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. This is Nick Keezer signing off with Russell Venusi here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.